Hello. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Bringing It All Back Home podcast. This is Charles, your host. Really excited to be coming back at you today. It's a bright, sunny Sunday here in February. Nice and cold. And yeah, that's kind of a theme for today's episode. It's going to be all about diving into a cold winter analog combo, which has extremely done its job. This is a combo that produced incredible results, really delivered. And I'd like to get into, yeah, what I use, what was the gear, why especially is this great for the colder days. So yeah, my shoots are going to include an actual snow day we had yesterday, as well as a very bright and frigid morning down in Wildwood. So yeah, grab a beverage of your choice. I've got some green tea right now and I'm ready to jump right in. So what is the analog combo I'm referring to? Well, it's a medium format combo. This is relying on my Pentax 645. No extra letters at the end. This is the original 645 from Pentax. This is manual focus only. I've mentioned this before on the podcast. I seem to have fallen back in love with it because I've got a brand new lens for it. And yeah, this lens is the SMC Pentax-A 150. This is the 150 3.5. Really under the radar lens. It's the crop factor equivalent of a 95, 96 millimeter. So not quite 105 and not quite 90, somewhere in between there. But if it's, if it makes it any easier, just sort of like in your head, think of this like a 105. Because I know a lot of you folks out there on 35 millimeter have shot 105. So think of this as just a slightly shorter version of a 105 point of view. The crop factor, again, on a 645 equals 96. So yeah, this is the Pentax 150. Not incredibly fast, but not horribly slow either. This is the 3.5. Two different weekends I went out in the very, very cold weather. The first analog combos using good old Fujifilm Acros 2, otherwise known as that stuff they make at Ilford now. And two different developers going for two quite different looks. The first developer was 100 plus 1, the highly, highly diluted version of Rodinal that is basically sitting around for an hour with one exception at 30 minutes, just one agitation. So technically you could call this a semi-stand version of highly diluted Rodinal. So that's the first analog combo. It's going to be the long lens, the new manual focus lens, which I just purchased off of eBay, the classic 645, and the combo of the classic slow speed 100 speed film, gorgeous, all the gorgeousness that is Acros, only in medium format where it really, really shines, and letting Rodinal do its thing. So that's the first winter combo. The second one, which I just shot yesterday, I'll save for a little bit. So let me start with the first combo, the first winter analog combo. Not sure if you guys have come back on the Fujifilm train, as it were. You know, seems like it wasn't that long ago when Fujifilm just said, we're done, we're out. All of the best Neopan films, which we've made for decades, are all going to be disappearing, including Neopan 1600, Neopan 400, films I would really wish were still around today. And guess what? We're even going to get rid of the most popular film we sell, the Acros 100, and that was it. It was done. And then miraculously, like I think it was around less than a year later, oh no, it's back. It's back. It's back. And as it turns out, yeah, it's being assembled and packaged and produced as Acros 2 in Ilford, in the UK, at Ilford. Prices have not dropped on Fujifilm, nor have they ever brought back the roll version of it, which would be a godsend. If they actually produced 100-foot rolls of it in 35, I would be completely sold. But for now, yeah, you can get it in 120 format, you know, the medium format version, and the 35 millimeter. And it's pricey. It's a pricey black and white film. And it's still as good as the previous version. So luckily they did not botch anything up at Ilford. It's still just as good as when it was made in Japan. The developer for this first batch really made a difference. That was Rodinal, or the version I tend to buy is the R09 version. And this is the semi-stand. And to be honest, I almost always do the highest dilution, the 100+1. I've tried it, you know, with the traditional or, you know, less diluted, less stand stuff to try to avoid the inconsistencies. And it's been okay. But be honest, I'd rather have at least one or two frames look a little wacky, but still get the rest of the roll looking absolutely brilliant, which is that semi-stand stuff. So I'll come back to the Rodinal a little bit later, not too much later. But for now, that is the combo, the slow speed classic Acros, which is, you know, debatable what it really is. Is it a tabular film? Is it a traditional or is it a T-grain film? I don't really know. You know, I've seen different ranges. Like T-grain is like a Kodak kind of marketing thing. And yet Acros does not quite look like a traditional tabular film in the sense of what you'd expect with, say, a Tri-X or even a slower, a slower tabular like, say, the Pan F from Ilford. Or even, you know, good old Ilford FP4, the classic grain. Acros seems to be like it almost sort of hints at a T-grain like thing. And if you look at their marketing, like, yeah, they do say it's got X, Y, and Z to help improve the resolution. And that is truly a thing. Acros has a kind of resolution that hints at an almost T-Max 100 like, but unlike T-Max 100, Acros has never. It never like falls into that almost bland sterility that T-Max 100 can sometimes do. T-Max 100 can sometimes be so freaking perfectly refined and high resolution, and seemingly when I develop it, it seems to tend to be, I don't know how to say it, not so much light on the contrast, but very, very much on that wider, pearly gray mid-tone thing. There's that thing that T-Max 100 does with the highlights, which is just so identifiable. Whereas Acros, depending on where how you shoot it, depending on how you expose it, whether you give it a touch of overexposure, whether it's a really contrasty scene, you can get some really pitch black shadows with Acros, you know, hence the Rodinal. So what the Rodinal's doing in semi-stand is that it kind of tames some of that stuff. It can still bring out the incredible sharpness or acuteness that you get in medium format. It lets it show its, you know, its natural grain. But at the same time, I think the dilution can sort of help it from going crazy with the contrast, especially the contrast or the highlights and things like that. So I don't know if that defined it very well, but anyway, love Acros too. Love it in Rodinal semi-stand in the 100+1 dilution. Seriously, if I could get a bulk roll of this in 35, which is never going to happen. I think it's been decades since they ever even had that. I could easily see just going for months and months and months on end and shooting nothing but Acros for 35 and nothing but Acros for medium format and just developing them both in a big tank of Rodinal R09, you know, like the ultimate lazy man's combo. Anyhow, going a little bit off topic, let's get back to the winter stuff. So what's the deal with this lens? I was, you know, looking to go a little bit further when it came to the 6.45. I had found that, I think I've mentioned this on a previous podcast, that I'd found that it was really my most neglected camera of late. Mostly because, you know, I knew that my RC67, I feel so lucky to have a working RC67. I feel like RC67 is truly bringing it all home for me. You know, when I step out with that guy, looking at that super cool, just everything about using it, let alone the results, especially the whole waist level finder rolling into that focus. Just a wonderful, wonderful experience. And I've mentioned before, like I had a little bit of a, not a little bit of a, I had a quite major difficult year last year with a lot of personal loss, family members who passed away. And I never, I'll never forget during a really, really tough week, just took out my RZ67 for a good old walk around the sunrise stuff, you know, the golden hour with the RZ. And it cheered me up so much. It just felt like I could, for at least that hour or half hour, rediscover the satisfaction of just taking the shots, regardless of the results. And the lovely thing about RZ67 was the results were and still are always impressive, if not amazing. So the 645, it didn't quite fit into my workflow. I had purchased it fairly cheap. I bought it in stages. I bought just the body. Looking at it now at a fairly high price, I could have easily have paid, I think, $100 less for the body. It was just on the tail end of COVID, and I didn't realize, or maybe at that time, it wasn't such a high price. But now, looking back, you can find a quote-unquote mint version from Japan for possibly $100 less than the one I got. On the other hand, I've never had any problems with this guy, not a single problem. And I've had it now for probably 3 years. So maybe, you know, maybe I got lucky. Maybe, you know, that little extra, that $100 extra I spent, at least it's a really nicely working camera. And then about a year and a half after that, I bought a few more of the film backs, because that's the one drawback with Pentax is that, I mean, the loading system's just fine, but it does really slow you down. Having for some reason, I can do the RZ67 loading a lot quicker. The Pentax is quite simple, but it just seems like a slower process. So I bought some extra backs, and that way I could, like, you know, hey, I'm doing a shoot out in the train tracks with some summer light, load up some Kodak gold onto those extra backs, and just keep using up the roll and changing it out. But this is not about the summer. This is about going out in the winter. And what I finally found all came together was, number one, I knew I was going to fall in love with this lens. There was something about, and I got this lens for like $100, mint. And the focus throw just felt perfect, you know. And I'm thinking like, oh man, as long as this guy is sharp, this is going to be an amazing experience. And I could just tell I really enjoyed the point of view, probably more than any other lens I'd ever put on the 645. I used to have the equivalent of the 28 on there. I used to have the conversion of the 105 from my 67 on there. But this 150 just felt perfect. There was something about the way, you know, it just makes sense. It's not a waist level finder. It's a very, very, you know, late 80s, early 90s style, you know, just this small, not a really huge viewfinder. And the fact that you're working essentially in telephoto just kind of brings it together. So as you're lining up that focus, it was so much easier to focus than any other lens I've had on there before. And now bringing it into shooting the last week of January, say, or shooting, no, actually, I guess, yeah, this was second week of February, the third week of February, dealing with the cold. So I really wanted to get to fall in love with this camera again, if possible. I also wanted to bring a medium format camera into the very, very cold weather. And I'm thinking, yeah, is it really the smartest thing to bring my RZ out there? No. Is it smart to bring an even older camera, like a Rolleicord or something like that? Definitely not. You know, you definitely are taking chances keeping, you know, a 70 or 80 year old camera in the, you know, this is, I'm talking about temperatures that never rise above in Fahrenheit, you know, 25. And with the wind chill feels like it's 20 or 18. Not a good idea. Another goal with the lens was I really, really just wanted something to improve upon my version of the 75. So that was the lens that you, if you want to go out right now and look for the original Pentax 645, you can get it bundled with the 75 2.8, which I was able to get quite a few decent shots, but it wasn't so much the lens. It was just being in the right place, shooting in medium format, having the right light, and having the right film. You know, where the shot to me is really the essence of the shot is because I was using Portra 160 at golden hour, because I was using Kodak 200 at golden hour. That seemed to be more where it really all came together. But on other less golden shots, you know, I could kind of tell it wasn't blowing me away with the resolution edge to edge. And it could just be that even though my copy was mint looking, and even when I resold it, the person I bought it from went out of their way to say, thank you so much, because the lens is in incredible condition. I just wasn't blown away by the sharpness or the resolution of it. I always felt like it was just a little bit less than average. So it was no big deal getting rid of it. On the other hand, the 45 millimeter 2.8, that was incredibly sharp with amazing resolution. And be honest, I don't know why I sold that. I guess I was just using it less and less. But, you know, that's one thing that would make, now that I have the equivalent of 96, and that's the equivalent of 28, now I kind of miss it, because I could really, you know, kind of like do a more rounded kind of shoot where I, you know, take off the telephoto, go back to that classic wide 28, vice versa, get the close-ups, go back to the 28. Now I kind of miss selling that lens. And my version was pristine and it kicked butt as far as sharpness and resolution. Anyhow, that's what I wanted to get. I wanted something to surpass my 75. Yes, it did. The Pentax on this original shoot down in Wildwood on a beautiful, beautiful morning was getting absolutely perfect light. It kicked ass. It absolutely kicked ass. Like, as soon as I finish this roll, and one of my habits is to make a PDF. I'll take my 5-star pictures and, you know, maybe 4 or 5, maybe 8 if I'm lucky, take the pictures and in Lightroom, convert them as if I'm about to print them out, but instead I save it as a PDF, and I have like a tiny, tiny little border around them, and I love just keeping them on my desktop on my computer, and that way I can just double-click that PDF, and what will open is just the favorite photos surrounded in a basically 1 or 2-page view with a nice white background. And it's there's nothing I'm going to be editing. You know, it's a very much like a viewing mode. Like I'm in just content absorption mode. Like, after all the buzz is ended, do I still feel like these are really amazing photos or good enough photos, especially a week later or a month later? Well, this roll I shot with the 150 and the Pentax in the absolutely freezing bright sunlight of a February morning, Sunday, to 2024, yeah, I'm just so happy with. The Acros kicked ass. I have this one photo, I think it was like the second shot I took, or maybe even the first, where I have this neon sign. Of course, it's not lit up. It's still only, I don't know, 8 in the morning. But the pearly midtones, the softer whites, the heading into the light grays, and then a gradation there as you move into the shadows. The shadow detail is phenomenal, but when it needs to kick in with the blacks, they are ink black. You know, so it's just like it's a study in wonderful tonal range. And just to you know, sweeten it up even more, it has such clear edge-to-edge sharpness and resolution. Yeah, that's one of my absolute favorites. But the one I keep going back to is this breeze block wall of a motel that unfortunately caught fire 2 summers ago and has still not been rebuilt completely. But luckily, they seem to be working on it. And yeah, it's basically just top to bottom of these really cool late 50s or early 60s breeze blocks, the texture of the walls, this really old, you know, air conditioning unit, the old style windows. And it's often where I'll just start my walk in Wildwood. Love shooting these breeze blocks. And for me, I stepped really far away on the street because I've got a 96, I've got a telephoto. And I just love the way it set up the composition. It really compressed it a bit. And the lighting was gentle and full of range, yet still within that early morning, you know, 6-7 degree sun up in the sky. And the way the Rodinal reacted with the Acros, it's just textbook. It's absolutely textbook. Like, you just get this perfectly refined grain. You're getting this wonderful sharpness that's still not sticking you in the face. You know, it's not like, it's not like the kind of sharpness where you go, oh my God, that's a little bit too much. It's just right. And the shadow detail, once again, is phenomenal. And just that whole Akros thing, where I could say this is Akros versus TE Max 100, is where it does move into the darkest points. You know, the Ansel Adams, you know, say one or two on the zone scale, they're punchy. So it's just wonderful. It's got this sort of like refined tonal grays, pearly as all, which you'd think of maybe on a really nice medium format FP4 or even a less contrasty Pan F. But no, this is Akros in, you know, high dilution, you know, 100 plus one Rodinal semi-stand, and it just kicked ass. So what I want to just emphasize also, too, about why this is such an amazing winter combo is I was shooting some of these shots with my gloves still on. You know, it was freezing out. And yet it didn't make a difference because there's nothing to advance. This is a very, very modern camera, just falling short in the sense that it doesn't do autofocus. But who cares? It slows it down. I could focus manually. And then, yeah, just pop the shutter. And it has, I usually use it in aperture priority, so I can control the depth of field stuff. And I'm obviously shooting, you know, relatively slow film in a sense. I'm shooting at 100, but I'm still getting that diffuse or, you know, golden hour sunlight. And I can move on to the next shot. It's just, you know, and advances and advances. And when it's done, it's going to completely auto do the, on the Pentax, I'm not sure if it spins it all the way back around, but basically it completes the roll for you too. So yeah, there's nothing you have to do. There is no need for a meter. There is no need for you to, you know, advance the film. And be honest, when it's cold enough, even that can start causing issues. You know, like when you're shooting 20 degree temperatures, but it's really windy and cold, even just advancing the film can start creating a sort of static electricity or something. It's just not always the best thing. But yeah, this thing was fantastic. The batteries never let me down in that thing either. So yeah, I hope you can hear my excitement because, yeah, I would never hesitate again to use this for a winter combo, no matter how freaking cold it is. Even if there's a slight, you know, flurries out there, I would definitely take the 645 out, and I would absolutely return again and again to the Rodinal and Akros, which leads me to the next one. This is the part two. This is the shoot I did yesterday on my way to work. So yesterday's snow was really just a photographer's dream. It started, I think, around 3 in the morning. It was completely done by 7 a.m., and it was a slightly, you know, warmer, wet, you know, thicker snow. Wasn't exactly freezing out. And, yeah, it was just enough to be that fluffy kind of bigger snow. There was no follow-up with ice. There was no follow-up with freezing rain. The roads were you know, warm enough that it didn't cause any hazards driving. I actually had to still go to work, but it was no problem. So what I did was I went out on the beach with, you named it, the 645, the 150. Only this time I wanted to use a different type of film because I really wanted to not stress out about the curling. And that's one thing I didn't quite mention, the curling. The dreaded curling on even Akros is quite bad, you know. So that is the one con. It is almost as bad as the T-Max or Kodak Tri-X in a really, really dry environment. So yeah, it was a little bit of a fuss trying to get this stuff to stay on my scanner in a flat way. I believe that I got just lucky enough. If it had been even a tiny bit more curly, I would have had to have waited a day or two and left it under a book or something. And that's fine, but it just introduces so many opportunities for dust. Although lately I have been using the, I'm not sure why I haven't used it in a while, but basically the compressed air stuff that seems to be helping me if I do get stuck removing, basically film from a sleeve. Well, why would I want to use FP4? Because there's none. There's none. I wish I could. I think I could. I could literally open every single podcast with, "Hey, do you realize that FP4 dries flat?" Like, it's such a freaking release, relief rather. Sorry, release. It's such a relief. I mean, so now I'm in pure everything's working mode. I have a film that's easy to load, of course, and a camera that's easy to load, and a camera that does auto exposure or aperture priority exposure that meters perfectly, that has the option with one click to visually see how much I want to overexpose it. So it has a really clear way to bump up the overexposure by one stop, by two stops. And it will still keep showing you that you're using it in the little retro viewfinders as well. So yeah, I'm shooting in the snow. I need to overexpose this stuff. The meter's going to think all the wrong thoughts. The meter's going to make all that snow look medium gray. You know, and I need to push it up. If that's number 5 on the zone scale, I need to get this guy to number 7, possibly even 8 to make Ansel Adams happy. So yeah, I need to overexpose this guy. So what I did was I set my ISO for 125. I didn't change that. And I just kept it on 2 stops overexposed. Jumped out, did some stuff on the beach. Wasn't perfect out there, but I thought it was something workable. And I was like, okay, I'm sort of happy with where this is. It could have been a little bit more interesting. Get into the car, wind my way out to work. And as soon as I go offshore, there's a road I take to get onto the expressway called Mill Road. And in the corner of my eye, I see this scene where every single branch and every single bit of overgrown stuff in this lot, and every tree in the distance has this perfect freaking fresh snow. There's fresh snow just glued to every single branch, and the sky still has that really nice charcoal pearly color. And I remember it was like one of these thought processes where it was like, I'm not going to stop, am I? I'm not going to stop. I'm going to stop. You know, so I basically just pulled into somebody's driveway in a house that hopefully didn't give a shit that I was, you know, suddenly taking up their driveway, got out with my camera, walked back to that lot, and tried my best to take some shots, leaving it in infinity. The difficulty was with those shots was that there were, compositionally, it was a little bit wild. You know, it was hard to really kind of know where is your eye going to go with all this stuff. You know, standing there, you're just appreciating the beauty 100% because every which way you look, you're like, it's all just so perfect. There's no wind, yet there's this perfect fresh snow in what is essentially a near monochrome scene. And there was even a hawk in the distance too on one of the trees. Everything was completely coming together. So again, I have the Pentax 645. It had just stopped snowing. I've turned on the exposure compensation to expose for 2 more stops. I've got Ilford FP4, and I'm planning to develop this in stock solution. Right now, I'm currently taking a break from D76 or ID11, and I've been going through my first 5 liters of the cheaper version of Kodak XTAL. This is the legacy brand, the Eco Pro, right? You know, the Eco stuff. So yeah, I've got that. I know that's going to be where I'm going to go. I'm going to basically cook this up in Eco, XTAL basically. And I'm out there taking my shots and I'm like, this should be good. You know, the whole day at work yesterday, I'm like, this should be good, right? I mean, it's the combo I can rely on for the results. You know, so again, when I was freezing out there on the streets of Wildwood last weekend, when I'm pressed for time and I've got a scene in front of me the next weekend and it's standing in the snow, I want a camera that's not going to break down. I want a camera that can easily adjust the exposure compensation. And I wanted to just advance without giving me any issues. And be honest, in that scene, I probably would have been even more in luck had I had the wide angle as well. But I made do with the equivalent telephoto, again, sort of near a 105. In this case, technically, it's a 96. And I know I'm going to be in luck because the next day I'm off. I've got FP4 in there. FP4 dries really perfectly. And yeah, I couldn't wait. So yeah, this morning I woke up. It wasn't really any great weather to take any more pictures because I was considering trying to do another roll for that Frugal Film project, which may be another podcast coming up. Got some expired Tri-X for my Konica. But in this case, yeah, I'm like, let me just, you know, get into that development. So I put the single roll into my tank, put it in some stock Extol, or in this case, again, Eco, and just plowed through the development, again, using my new method, which is to switch from my tap water at the very, very end to the kind of Ilford shake and bake with distilled method, you know? So I pretty much stop the tap water around 8 minutes, dump it, load up the tank with distilled water, and then shake and agitate that 20 times, pour that out, and then use the photo flow with a much smaller dilution, or, you know, smaller amounts and a higher dilution, with also diluted water. And this is really, really, actually tangibly given me nearly 100% perfectly clean negatives. I originally wanted to look into this method because I was getting issues with my medium format. And yeah, I think I'd mentioned in the last podcast, So I used my fingers to get the first round done of trying to get the suds off. And then I apply, what's it called again? The Kim wipe. Is that it? Yeah, the Kim wipes. And there's a method on YouTube I can link to as well to show you how to do that. So seemingly everything went fine during the shoot. The camera was reliable. The film just loaded perfectly. I trusted in the metering. And right now, as I'm speaking to you, I have the PDF of the shots, and they're wonderful. They're freaking great. They're everything I would want them to be. You know, I think the only difference, if I really had to nitpick, I think I would have loved to have tried this with the Acros and Rodinal combo as well. I would have loved to have been able to like do two rolls in the snow and compare that, because they're really a different look. You know, the stock version of Extol is going to have a little bit of Accutance and a little bit of extra sharpening. It's going to let that native, you know, grain breathe. But it's not going to do it to the extent that 100 plus 1 Rodinal will, where it's really, you know, just, you know, it has like this extra, extra layer of definition. This is, I wanted this to be, like, if I had D76 right now, I would have used that D76 stock. I kind of just wanted it to get the tonal range and hopefully control what potentially could have been some overexposure. But no, I think I did okay. I didn't get to Ansel Adams territory here where I had like so many defined versions of the snow, you know. But definitely I think I achieved mostly what I wanted to do to get with the exposure. That is basically my analog combo for winter. I can't recommend the 645 enough. Obviously, there's a more popular competitor out there with Mamiya. I don't have any experience with the Mamiya one, but I can say from experience, I've had this 645 now for several years. It has never once failed me. The lenses out there are great. I highly recommend, at least from my experience, the wide angle 45 and this telephoto, the equivalent of a 96, but it's technically it's a 150 for 645. Really awesome results. I particularly love this setup for summer months as well. It's always kicked butt with Portra 160 and Kodak Gold. But yeah, for now, it is definitely my most reliable camera for when it's absolutely freezing out. And this whole experience the last 2 weekends has once again Number one, just made me a complete convert of medium format Akros with 100 plus one semi-stand Rodinal. A killer combination. Again, you have to at least still be accepting of the fact that you could still have one or two frames with some kind of weirdness. There's always that seems to be at least one frame in the roll where you may risk not getting perfectly even development, but I think it's worth it. I really think it's worth it. You know, if you're completely worried about that, you could always do some duplicate shots just to make sure you've got yourself covered. But yeah, just killer combination. Again, love FP4 for the way it's 100% easy to use and extremely well priced, but I definitely love Akros even more right now. Not so much a fan of the way it dries, though, of course, because like I said, it tends to curl right away. Like the minute you hang these up to dry, is not the top to bottom curl, the worst curl, the curl where the, you know, it's inside out curling. So, but yeah, that's my only negative. But once again, the Pentax 645 handle the cold, auto advanced, auto rewound, easy to load other film backs, incredible, perfect exposure metering. Awesome if you love aperture priority mode. Super freaking affordable, built like a tank, and you get the most value out of your medium format expensive rolls because you're getting at least 15 shots. So yeah, I would not only consider this a great winter analog combo, but I would put this without a doubt in the top three best budget combos for medium format with reliability and results as the key. Is it a camera that's going to make you feel amazing? Just look at it. No. Is it a camera that's going to send these, you know, those mysterious electronic signals to your synapses just holding it? No. There is nothing magical about the way it looks and the way it feels. It's a purely functional camera. So yeah, it does, you know, which is again one of the reasons why people leave digital, because they want to go back to film. They want to go back to that instant feedback that you get with beautiful film cameras. Not doing so great there with the Pentax. But there's room in everybody's workflow for at least one of these. You know, at least one camera where you're like, yeah, to hell with the aesthetics. Let me just get the results. Let me have a camera where the battery's not going to flake out. Let me be able to get in and out of these cold environments with perfect exposure and auto advance. Let me be able to make sure I can focus properly and make sure that when I get this roll back, I'm not dealing with any flakiness. I'm not dealing with skip frames. I'm not dealing with the shutter didn't close properly. None of that. This guy functioned perfectly in extremely cold temperatures. And that's basically it. That's what I got from my winter combo. Hope you guys are good. Hope to be back again as soon as possible with another Bringing It All Back Home.